Okay. This is Deanna Spingola. It is Monday, August 27th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is John Friend. His website is johnfriendsblog.blogspot.com, and he has recently had a little bit of a situation with an organization called the Jewish Defense League. Now, I have a little story of my own. I'm just going to share it with you briefly. Last year, I dedicated an entire week from May 9th to May 13th to what I called Ernst Zundel Week, Off Your Knees, Germany. The guests focused on the trials of Ernst Zundel and the Holocaust, which is, of course, a real sacred cow. I selected German marching music for that music that week. Prior to that, a friend provided some uncopyrighted music that he had written. However, I was getting tired of that music and wanted to change. Therefore, I found the song Peace Train by The Ventures on YouTube, uploaded by a private person. It had hundreds of downloads, and I assumed it was in the public domain. I asked RBN to use that rendition of the song, assuming, of course, that it was in the public domain. RBN began using that song on May 16th. About 3 weeks later, a lawyer claiming to represent the copyright holder for Peace Train sent a letter to RBN threatening a $250,000 lawsuit. I received an email with that same threat. I no longer have that email, as I had a complete computer crash on a 9-month-old computer about 6 weeks later. Anyway, RBN pulled all of the audio files out of the archives for the entire months of May and June. However, I'd only used that song for about 3 weeks until, of course, we got this nasty email and letter. So anyway, they pulled all of these songs. Now, the thing that is incredibly significant here is that YouTube and the ADL have had a partnership since December 2008. Many people have uploaded various Spingola program audio files to YouTube. So I am sure that the ADL was aware of the general content of my programs. It was the content of my programs, especially that week that we discussed the Holocaust, that YouTube and the ADL did not like. Therefore, they used the song copyright issue to attack me. The other significant issue is that many, many radio hosts use copyrighted music on a continuous, regular basis. I was listening to a Jim Fetzer audio last Friday and was amazed that he used several songs from the Beatles. All right, John, we all have a story, and you have a story about the Jewish Defense League, so why don't you share that with us?
Sure thing. Yeah, I guess I can join the club now. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned that because, we all know that ZCF has been under attack and ProThink. They've had their websites booted off, GoDaddy and some other servers. And then I know I actually heard Lindsay, one of our friends and one of the frequent callers to your program, he called in saying that his YouTube channel got just totally deleted one day. So it seems like they're trying to kind of ratchet up, this anti-free speech and sort of, intimidate us that are, exposing Jewish criminality and Jewish crimes and, trying to set the record straight when it comes to some important historical events. So, it's just kind of typical, I guess. This is what the Jews do. They don't want to debate you. They want to try to silence you or intimidate you and, basically limit your free speech because when you speak the truth, of course it's anti-Semitic, so.
Right. That's their card that they pull out and play, and certainly they've done it very successfully from the time that before they invented the ADL. I mean, they've been doing this since B'nai B'rith was established in 1843 in New York City, and the whole reason that they did that was to protect their tribe.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, that's one of the biggest things is, they sort of deflect all criticism of Jewish power and just Jewish activities and Jewish organizations in general and say it's either anti-Semitic to bring it up or, somehow they want to steer clear of the facts and, that they don't want anything coming to light. And they just use these underhanded, cowardly tactics to do that. So, it's just, it's typical. It's something that we should probably be expecting, especially going forward. I mean, it seems like they've really been on a, that this has really been something that they've been doing, especially lately. So we'll have to kind of see how it plays out from here, but.
And it's okay to give moderate criticism of Israel in order to gain credibility that you're not pro-Jewish and you're not pro-Israel. So it's okay for a lot of people, even in the alternative, so-called alternative media, to criticize Israel. But heaven forbid that you even mention the Holocaust, because once you do that, and 9/11, that's another taboo subject. But even 9/11, you can mention it. And in fact, you have a nice article about 9/11. The title of it, Zionist Jew Admits Jews Did 9/11, kind of. But anyway, tell us about what the Jewish Defense League said to you and why they said it.
Sure, yeah. Well, basically, I thought it was kind of interesting when I received this email. I received it on August 20th, which I believe was last Monday. And I thought it was interesting because I remember Mark Glenn of The Ugly Truth, he received a very similar email. And I did some checking, and it turns out this is the same guy who actually wrote an email to Mark Glenn and basically said the same thing. And I have the email here in front of me. I can read it to everybody real quick. It's just two quick paragraphs.
Sure, go ahead.
It says, well, first off, the subject says, "Greetings from the JDL." And of course, that stands for the Jewish Defense League. And it says, "Mr. Friend, in the middle of the last century, Jews had no right or means of response when they were demonized, persecuted, and attacked by your ideological soulmates. Today, the world is a very different place. When we are attacked by Nazi filth like you, we respond with all the resources at our disposal and with extreme prejudice. You have been waging a campaign of anti-Semitic terror for a long time, but the time has come for you to pay for your crimes against the Jewish people. There are three things that you should remember. The code that we live by is, quote unquote, never again. Our hatred of Nazi scum like you is stronger than your hatred of us, and we didn't choose you as an enemy. You chose us. Danny Levy, the Jewish Defense League." And it's just so ridiculous, receiving this. I mean, could you imagine, Deanna, if you or I sent an email to JDL or, the Anti-Defamation League or any number of other Jewish organizations saying that it was, quote unquote, time for the Jews to pay for their crimes, lies, and slanders against the German people, or against the Muslim people? I mean, could you imagine if one of us were to send an email like that to one of these guys? I mean, we would be instantly investigated by the FBI, I'm sure. There'd be no doubt. It'd be all over the mainstream Jewish-controlled media. We'd be demonized, and we would never hear the end of it. And yet this scumbag Danny Levy can send something like this to me or Mark Glenn, and we're trying, I filed a report with the FBI immediately. I honestly doubt anything will come of it because it's not, a specific threat on my life or anything like that. I mean, he worded it just like a Jew would, like a lawyer, so he can, avoid any sort of incriminating evidence against him. But, could you imagine if somebody like us, if somebody like me or you or anybody else for that matter that's in our camp were to send an email of this nature to, like I said, a Jewish organization, for all the lies and slanders that they've told against, Hitler and Germany and the Muslims, for, blaming them for 9/11. So, I mean, it's just the utter hypocrisy of the establishment, the media, and even our law enforcement agencies is just astounding.
Now, did you write back to this guy?
I didn't even bother responding to him.
Huh. I was just thinking that I might have, it might be a kind of a funny thing to do, if you just used the same format and like you could say, today the world is a very different place. When we were attacked by Jewish filth like you, We respond to the resources at our disposal and with extreme prejudice. You have been waging a campaign of Jewish terror against Americans for a long time, but the time has come for you to pay for your crimes against all people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what I mean. And you know, maybe that's actually a good idea. Maybe I will do that, you know, later on tonight or something. But, you know, I wanted to see how the FBI would respond to it.
I think that's a good idea.
Before I do anything, you know, I'd really like to see how it plays out. I've been in contact with them, you know, a few times over the past, you know, I guess it's been about a week now or a little over a week. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I've talked to a couple different individuals at the San Diego office here, and they basically said, you know, they kind of just explained the general procedure. Apparently it goes to the domestic terrorism unit, and from there they do an investigation and determine if it's, you know, if it does need to be investigated further. And so, you know, I kind of just like to see what they say and if I get a call back. And one of the things that they've emphasized repeatedly when I've spoken with anybody down there is they always say, well, you know, we will call you if we need any more information or if there's any updates. So they're kind of hinting, you know, stop calling us, you know, we're on this, we'll let you know. So, you know, but like I said, I highly doubt that anything will come of this. You know, he worded it in such a way to where it wasn't, you know, a direct threat on my life or, you know, my family's life or anything like that. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see, but it's typical from these, you know, Jewish supremacists. You know, they can't have, heaven forbid, anybody criticize them. You know, they control every aspect of the media. You know, they basically control every particle of information anybody digests. And, you know, heaven forbid, I have my blog and I'm trying to, you know, expose what they're doing to a limited audience. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Right. I was just doing a little search on Danny Levy, or Levi, I guess Levy, of the Jewish Defense League. And the Mel Gibson official website just popped up, which I think is kind of interesting.
You know, I was actually speaking with somebody last week, and they had just done a basic search on this guy, and it sounds like he might be a film director. But I, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know much. I don't know anything about the guy, to be honest with you. And like I said, I haven't even responded to his email. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. You know, one thing that needs to be clear is that, you know, I certainly won't tolerate any of these, you know, Jewish threats or, you know, any of these, you know, I won't tolerate any of this Jewish tyranny, these Jewish lies, you know, this Jewish supremacy in general. I mean, I'm sick and tired of it. You know, I woke up to this about 3 years ago, and it's just, you know, something that's constantly on my mind now because you see it everywhere. You know, you watch a movie, you turn on the TV, it's, you know, you can just notice it once you kind of have a knack for figuring this stuff out. So, you know, I won't tolerate this. I won't tolerate these pathetic, you know, intimidation tactics. You know, this just sort of makes me want to redouble my efforts, you know?
Right. And you say that you woke up to it 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 3 years ago. Yeah, I guess it's been a little bit under 3 years, but right about 3 years ago. Yeah,
I think that's quite amazing. You must be a very astute person.
Well, you know, once I got a computer, I don't watch TV anymore. I read all the time, so that was a major help. You know, once you kind of get into this information, you just want to learn as much as you can. And you know, I think we talked about last time we had a conversation, you know, for the first year, well, actually probably the first year and a half or so, I started looking into 9/11. I mean, I was interested in figuring out everything about 9/11, you know, all the different aspects and all the different details. And once I did that, I started looking at World War II history, and that's sort of what I'm into now. And you know, like I was before we started this conversation, I was telling you, maybe we can talk about some of those subjects later on, but.
Oh, go ahead. Sure. That'd be great.
Yeah. You know, there was a couple of things I wanted to mention though. I was just scanning the news today, and, you know, it's just amazing. You know that same rabbi, Rabbi Yosef, who's a rabid Jewish supremacist, who said, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. He said that Gentiles exist to serve Jews. I mean, if anybody just does a Google search, that article will come up, and he's up there proudly proclaiming that all non-Jews are on earth solely to serve Jews, and we're basically their slaves and whatnot.
Right, I think that's right out of the Talmud.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Well, I just thought it was funny because just earlier, I guess it was just yesterday, he's up there in Jerusalem asking all Jews to pray for Iran's destruction
Yeah, I saw that.
and Hezbollah's destruction. And I mean, this guy gets up there and says stuff like this, and yet Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, gets his quote totally distorted. He's not even call, you know, he didn't even call for the elimination of Israel or whatever the Jews say he said. It's totally distorted, and yet this guy gets up there and is calling for Jews to pray for Iran's destruction. It's incredible, the hypocrisy.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, and of course they control the media, so we're never going to hear anything negative about them.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And here's a quote directly from what he said. He said, we have Hezbollah and we have Iran. May the Lord, blessed be he, eliminate them from the face of the earth. So, I mean, this is reported in the Jewish Telegraph Agency. I mean, I don't think they're distorting this guy's quote. And yet this is, just business as usual. The Jews can call for Germany's destruction before World War II with Theodor Kaufman's book, Germany Must Perish. A current case, this Rabbi Yosef can call for Hezbollah and Iran's destruction and complete elimination from the face of the earth. And yet, we even expose one single Jewish criminal act, and yet we're anti-Semitic and we're demonized in the media. It's just absolutely incredible and intolerable anymore. I mean, I can't stand this stuff. It's just so incredible.
Right, and I note that you use Jewish sources, and so when you take it right out of their mouths when you quote them, and use their sources to say what they are doing, they still go after you. Oh, and maybe that's why.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of hard to to debate with somebody that's quoting them right from the horse's mouth. It's pretty tough for them to do it. And that's why they have to use these sort of intimidation tactics or just outright slanders and demonization, because they can't have an honest debate with us about this stuff, because we have their number. That's how it is, and that's what they have to do. They have to either slander us or demonize us or totally, just make up wild accusations and just get people to not even look at what we're saying. So, I mean, this is just typical Jewish behavior.
Right. Now, do you, how does your family receive this information?
Deanna, I try. I mean, it's so incredible. Like, nobody wants to hear any of this stuff, Nobody cares, it seems like. It's incredible. And that's something that I know. I listened to your interview with John Kaminsky yesterday, and I thought it was a great interview. I think, geez, I don't know if there's anything you guys didn't cover in that interview. You pretty much talked about everything.
Right.
But I mean, that's something that we have to understand. Not everybody, in fact, most people are not simply, they're not going to wake up. They're not going to do the research. They're not going to have any sort of interest in this. They're happy living in their fantasy, and sorry about that. That's a sad reality that we have to face, but that's how it is.
There is not one single U.S. family that is not touched, that is not impacted in some way or another by the Jews. And it doesn't matter which family you're talking about. I'm talking about everybody in the country. If you have a family member that has a serious illness, if your children have been vaccinated, if you've lost your job, if you've had your house foreclosed, if you have if you're paying income tax, if you're paying if you're have bank loans, just about if you have to pay for I don't know. There's so many things. Everybody is impacted. And if they actually knew why their life was not as they had planned it, why they are having problems, why it cost $50,000 to send a child to school for a year, if they ever just sat down and wondered about this, instead of just accepting life and just being, well, is it distraction or is it ignorance or is it brainwashing? What do you think it is?
I think our biggest thing is television. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. Television and mass media, which we know is clearly in Jewish hands. I mean, it's a form of mind control. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, if you're watching TV, you are not going to wake up. You won't. I mean, you have to turn off the TV. You have to pick up a book. You have to read. And people simply don't read. I mean, I think that's the most depressing thing about this whole situation is, and Deanna, if they do read, they're reading these trash novels like, you know, Twilight and all these other garbage fiction books. You know, they're not reading anything of substance. Or they're reading, you know, these trash magazines where it's all about celebrities and who had sex with who and who's dating who. And it's just all, and it's literally all, it's all Jewish propaganda. There's no doubt in my mind.
And that's basically what you get in the news is just gossipy kinds of things. And they actually started doing this over 100 years ago when they took over the newspaper industry, the media in Germany. Back before maybe in 1870 or so, they started doing this. Well, actually 1848, it was after the revolution there. And they basically waged a cultural war against Germany at that time. And one of the first things that they did was to take over the press, the newspaper, the publishing. And that is what they did in this country. Early on, they took over the media.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, after we had our last conversation, I bought a copy of Mein Kampf and I've been reading it and I'm just about through the first volume. It's a pretty pretty substantial read. I mean, there's a lot of very important things to read and just it's really the substance of it is, you know,
amazing.
Pretty, yeah.
It is an amazing book.
And it's funny, Deanna, I'm trying my hardest to find one thing I disagree with him about, and I can't find anything.
No, it's...
He nails so many things, and getting, you know, what you were talking about is this, he actually describes this, I just did a blog post about this, my most recent one was from Saturday, and Hitler talks about cultural Bolshevism, and, it, you know, basically it's the same thing as cultural Marxism, which is what, you know, America went through in the 60s, well, actually probably even beginning in the 50s, but continuing in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And I have a quote here real quick I'd like to read. In chapter 10, of Mein Kampf, it's the collapse of the Second Reich.
Okay.
And he's basically analyzing the process of cultural degeneration and subversion that the German state and German society went through. And this is from page 179 of the official Nazi English translation that I have a copy of. He says, here in the cultural sphere, the signs of the coming political collapse first became manifest. The Bolshevization of art is the only cultural form of life and the only spiritual manifestation of which Bolshevism is capable. Anyone to whom this statement may appear strange need only take a glance at those lucky states which have become Bolshevized, and, to his horror, he will there recognize those morbid monstrosities which have been produced by insane and degenerate people. And I take a look at, you know, the art in America and music in America and movies, and I clearly recognize the morbid monstrosities which have been produced by insane and degenerate people.
Oh, absolutely. And you have a picture of Lady Gaga?
Yeah. I mean,
and what is that?
As soon as I read this, I mean, everything, I have the copy right here next to me, and I basically highlighted every single page. I mean, it's incredible how many insightful things he had to say on a number of different topics. I mean, he wasn't just sitting there writing about the Jews. He was writing about all sorts of subjects, and all of it is just right on the money. It's very insightful. It's very profound. And as I read this chapter in particular, and as he was describing, the coming political collapse of the Second Reich and how the German culture was just corrupted and degenerate. I see that so much here in America, and I've always recognized this ever since, I was even in high school and throughout college. And it's sort of something that has always been on my mind, and I'm sort of a, I guess you could say I'm sort of a victim of it. I think anybody that's grown up in America is pretty much a victim of it because they're subjected to it every single day of their lives. So of course it's going to have an impact on them. And when I was reading this, the first thing that popped in my mind was this disgusting lady, Lady Gaga, who's I'm not sure if you know who she is, but
Oh,
she's,
sure.
yeah, I don't, I don't listen to any of her music or
I
anything.
don't either, but I'm aware of who. You have to really look at some of the stuff that's going on. You don't have to participate in it, but you have to know about it so that you can determine what is happening to you. And this picture, just reading the description, I'm thinking, no, that you've got to be kidding. But tell us about it.
Oh no, this was incredible. I mean, I actually I'm not sure when this was. I think it was a couple of years ago, but Lady Gaga showed up at like an MTV Music Award to accept an award that they gave her, and she had the nerve to put on a dress made of meat, made of raw meat. I mean, this is the most disgusting, depraved, degenerate thing that you could ever witness. I mean, just the spectacle of her stand. I mean, I have a picture right there on the blog.
I'm just shocked. I'm just looking here at this picture, and when I read the description, I thought, no, this cannot be. But it is.
And this is exactly what Hitler was talking about when he was explaining what happened to Germany, and this is what's happened to America, and it's happened over time. I mean, it really got kick-started with the whole cultural quote unquote revolution in the 60s, and the hippie movement and the women's liberation movement, and this acceptance and this promotion of homosexuality and alternative lifestyles and all this garbage and filth. I mean, it's just been promoted, and this is a result of it. This we have a Bolshevized culture, and who's behind Bolshevism? The Jews are, clearly. I mean, the cultural Marxism, the Frankfurt School, this is all the product of Jewish brains and, depraved and psychopathic Jewish brains. I mean, it's just incredible. Like, as soon as I was reading this in Mein Kampf, this is the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, wow. I mean, I can just picture Hitler, seeing Lady Gaga in this disgusting meat outfit. And I mean, it's just incredible, how accurate what he was saying was, and right on the money what he was saying was.
Right. This is even more depra- How do they even come up with this depravity?
Isn't it incredible? I don't know. I mean, and for people to accept this and to cheer this on and to think that this is normal, it's incredible to me. I mean, I didn't even know that when this came out, I didn't even know about this until, some months after the fact. And I didn't even really look at any of the pictures or anything. But when I was reading Mein Kampf, and this was the first thing that I thought of, and I just did a Google search for it, and I found this picture, and I was like, wow, this is just amazing.
Yes.
And then the second photo I have right there is the Piss Christ, which was, a photograph by a US artist, Andres Serrano, who I think actually, I'm not sure about this. I think he might be Jewish.
That name is very familiar. I think I just read that name today in a book that I'm reading. I'm sure that I did read that name. Let me just look here. I just have it sitting right next to me.
The picture, I'll just describe the picture real quick.
Please.
It's basically a small plastic crucifix supporting the body of Jesus Christ, submerged in a glass of the artist urine. I mean, this artist urinated in a glass and took, a crucifix of Jesus and put it in the urn and said it's art. And then there's also a rumor that the glass may have contained some of the artist's blood. I mean, this is the most degenerate, disgusting. I mean, words can't even describe how vile this is. And yet, this was the winner of the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Arts Award in the Visual Arts Competition. This guy won an award for this.
Let's talk just a bit about these awards. We have to ask, who is it that decides who gets a Nobel Prize? We have to ask, who are the people who are giving out these MTV Video Music Awards? Who are the people that give out the Emmy Awards and the awards for those awards where they pick the best picture?
The Academy Awards.
Yeah. You can tell I'm not into this.
Well, God bless you for not being into it. You shouldn't be. Nobody should be.
And you have to ask yourself, okay, these are people who are giving each other awards. This is not what America is wanting. These people do their gross things, and then they award each other for doing these things. And it's supposed to give them credibility. For instance, this artist, Andre Serrano, did he get credibility for doing this? And people, ignorant people who are reading about the awards are going to say, wow, you know, I guess that, well, somebody must have thought that was wonderful. So somehow it must be wonderful, because awards give people credibility. It's like the Pulitzer Prize or being on the New York Times bestseller list. That just adds credibility to what the person has achieved or what the person has written or what. It really is just, I don't know. It's just, that's what it's designed to do, is to award credibility for something that otherwise would not have had any, would not have received any acclamation or applause or anything.
Well, what it's designed to do, I mean, yeah, you're right, but it's also designed to promote this degenerate behavior and to make it acceptable and normal.
Yes.
I think that's basically what the whole goal of it is. And I mean, it's clearly had a major impact on our culture and, you know, how people think. And I mean, for instance, this piece of art, quote unquote, that I'm talking about here, this Piss Christ, this was actually supported by the National Endowment for the Arts. I mean, this is a federally financed, you know, taxpayer financed institution. And it's just incredible that, you know, our tax dollars are supporting this. Our tax dollars are supporting the fraudulent Holocaust Museum.
Where is the outrage?
Exactly. That's what I don't understand. I mean, you know what really, what I really didn't understand, and this was even before I woke up to the whole Jewish question. I was a senior in college. It was my very last semester. And one of the classes that I took was international political economy. And, you know, we're reading, what's the guy's name? I have his book right here. Milton Friedman.
Oh, yeah.
We're reading these free market Jews and all their propaganda and whatnot. And we're supposed to believe that, you know, the United States is the most free market economy. While I'm in this class, Deanna, while I'm in this class learning about this, you know, we passed TARP and the federal government is trillions of dollars to Wall Street. And I'm sitting here in class like, what are we talking about here? This is totally not what's going on. And I mean, there's this major cognitive dissonance going on in my brain. And I'm sitting here and I was just totally disillusioned. I was like, everything that I'm learning right now is completely fraudulent. And it's being demonstrated how it's completely fraudulent right in front of my face. You know, it's just, it was really an amazing time to, you know, to finish my degree and to be studying a subject like that when all this was going on. And I mean, that was a big wake up call. But anyway, sorry, that was a little bit off topic. But
well, no, it isn't. And this happens. People believe what they're told because we are so indoctrinated to accept the authorities in our lives. And I was talking a bit about this with John Kaminsky on Saturday, and talking about the Pledge of Allegiance, which was written by a socialist early in let's see, 1893, 94, somewhere around there. They were getting ready for to celebrate 1892. It was in 1892. They were getting ready to celebrate Christopher Columbus's discovery. And, you know, really, I mean, when you think about it, that the Pledge of Allegiance was written by a socialist, but nobody stops to think. Think of all the times well, have you ever, when you were going to school, did you have to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yeah, I remember in definitely in grade school, you know, it was something that we were expected to do. I mean, they weren't like forcing us or anything like that, but yeah, it was expected of us, that's for sure.
And you said it so often in grade school that you never gave it any thought about what exactly you were doing and what exactly it meant. And now I'm sure people just go through it's just rote. They don't actually comprehend what they're saying. But basically what you're saying is that you're pledging your allegiance to the government. And in fact, the government should be pledging allegiance to the citizens. They serve us. We do not serve them. And yet they've turned the whole darn thing completely around so that we have to vow to serve them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Deanna, I don't even really like using the word citizen. I'd rather say the people, because a citizen is a corporate word and
right.
All that entails. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. And it just reminds me, you know, every once in a while I'll go down and watch the Padres play, and on Sundays it's like the military day or military appreciation day. And I mean, I can't stand it. I mean, it's just everybody's mindlessly cheering and clapping, and it's like nobody even stops to think about what our military is actually doing, you know. And I was on an airplane. I was flying one time, and there was a dead U.S. soldier that was being transported home to be buried, and we had landed, and they announced that, and you know, they're like, you know, everybody pay their respects to our veteran, and you know, blah blah blah. And everybody just starts clapping, and I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, I'm ready to get up and walk out and just I was just completely disgusted. You know, I just, it's incredible what people don't stop to think. People do not think critically. I think that's the biggest thing, is people do not actually use their own brain.
Well, music has the ability to touch our emotions. And that is why musicians and pop music and all of that, and military music, particularly at big gatherings like a football game, it's very important that to them that we get that they use music. And of course, they've done it with our national anthem and everything. And of course, we don't think about the words there. We just get up and sing them, and we were taught as children that we had to feel a certain way. But there is something about music that does touch something, our inner being. And so they have selected this medium to influence our perceptions. And I'm sure, like at a football game, the Padres, is that football? Yeah.
It's actually baseball.
Oh.
It's the same either way. I mean, any sporting event you go to, it's high school, college, professional, it's all the same thing. You know, you got the flag, you got the jets flying over your head, everybody's cheering, you know, we love the USA, and it's like nobody stops to even think what that even means. So I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. It's incredible that people just go along with this blindly.
But they've militarized sports.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, it's one of the biggest propaganda tools at their disposal.
I mean, that you have your uniforms, you have they actually use military language to, like, oh, we got to win, this team has got to win, and it's all about force and toppling the other people, and then they incorporate the patriotic music, And don't you get well, you get an award basically. The team that wins, don't they get a trophy or something?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, exactly. Whoever wins the championship gets the big trophy and whatnot. And that's the thing, because I mean, don't get me wrong, I love competition. I love sports. You know, I grew up playing baseball and football. You know, I still enjoy watching sports, but I mean, you know, I can recognize what the purpose of it is and what the sort of propaganda behind it, because now they use it rather than as something productive and positive. It's more of just a piece of propaganda, you know, a propaganda tool at their disposal. Because I mean, you know, they clearly, before the game even starts, you know, they have the national, like you said, the national anthem and the jets flying overhead, and it's been totally corrupted and totally distorted. And then, you know, people in the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball, they're making millions of dollars, and these are our new idols that we look up to. Never mind the guy who likes to read and you know, cares about his people and, you know, wants to change the world for a better way. You know, just pay attention to the athlete that's making all the money. That's what the Jews have done. I mean,
Well, if you notice, most of those big teams are owned by Jews. Whether you're talking about hockey, whether you're talking about just about any sport, you will find that Jews control that. And when you think about, I think I mentioned Pat Tillman in the last few days, but if Pat Tillman had come home from Afghanistan and told exactly what was going on over there, a lot of people would have listened to him. But if you talk about it, or I talk about it, people aren't so apt to listen to us. But they would have listened to him because he is a hero to them because of his sports participation.
yeah, exactly. It's completely distorted in a very bad way. And you know, it's and you guys got me thinking when you were talking to John, because you guys were kind of talk about, you know, how we can get out of this mess. And I mean, it's tough. It's like, where do we go from here? What can we do to change things? And the way I look at it now, I was actually thinking about this quite a bit this weekend. And you know, obviously we have to stay, you know, we have to remain steadfast. We have to stand up for the truth. There's no doubt about that. But also, I mean, I think at this point it's going to be more productive to target the sort of younger generation. Because think about it, the older generation, you know, like my parents' generation, and you know, even the generation, you know, the greatest generation, quote unquote, the greatest generation that went over and destroyed the one man who was standing up to the Jews, Hitler. You know, and they think that they're the greatest generation, when in fact they're probably the worst generation, at least in, you know, the past 50 or 60 years. But anyways, I mean, the younger generation, you know, my age and younger, you know, anybody that's, you know, under the age of 35, let's say, you know, they're going through this and they're seeing our economy collapse. They've been through 9/11. You know, it's very obvious. I mean, that to me, and this is what John said too, and this is something that I always try to emphasize, is 9/11 has to be the key, because it is so obvious and there's so many problems with it. I mean, all you have to do is mention Building 7. And if that doesn't get somebody's attention or spark their interest, then, you know, they're a lost cause and you may as well move on.
Right. And I believe that that's why they are going after ZCF.
Yeah, I mean, I mean,
Because he
he's about
appeals,
closing everything, yeah.
yeah, he appeals to the younger generation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a product of, you know, I think he's a couple, what is he, like 2 or 3 years younger than me. So yeah, I
He's
mean,
22. No, 21, 22. No, he's 22.
yeah. And I mean, there's plenty of people, you know, that age and you know, a little bit older that are waking up to this stuff, and it's going to take some time before, you know, we're ever going to be able to do something about it. I mean, we're not going to be able to change things overnight, as much as we would like to do that. So I mean, I think at this point, I think it's going to be the most productive thing to do is to really target that younger generation. And not only that, but also, you know, veterans and people in the military, which is really a tough crowd. I mean, I've tried doing that and I haven't had much success. But, I mean, I think these are the type of people that have direct experience with all this madness, and, they obviously have credibility. I mean, if somebody in the military or a veteran, they're just instantly revered, by anybody in the public
Or
because.
they're put into an institution.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it's. Yeah, but my main point is that I think that that's the route to go at this point, is really target the younger generation, because the older generation has been through this, and quite frankly, they failed. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, there's certainly been people that have stood up and tried doing something about it, and some of the best sources of information are from that generation, but nobody wanted to listen. So I mean, it's going to be the younger generation that's going to be able to actually do something about it, because we're experiencing this, we're living through this. We've seen the Wall Street bailout, we've seen 9/11, we've seen all these wars, we've seen the outright control of our government by Israel and Jews. It's so obvious now. That's the thing. It's so out in the open that, I think there's going to be more and more people starting to question things, and that's who we really need to get on board with this stuff, is the younger generation, because that's where the future lies.
Right now, how do you propose to do that? How do you attract the younger generation? One of my listeners recently said that everybody that he knew, and I believe that he was, I don't know, 20, 21, something, he said that people really are using social media, Facebook, Twitter, that kind of thing, and that a lot of young people aren't even doing email anymore. But they're doing the social media. However, I don't particularly like Facebook. In fact, I had a Facebook page, but then I disabled it because I think it's a government operation. I think it's a they're collecting information that perhaps they can't get elsewhere. And so I disabled my page a couple of years ago, but he really, really strongly recommended that I use Twitter.
Yeah. See, I had Facebook when it first came out, basically. I'm trying to think. I think it well, it came out originally, and it was only for Harvard University, if I remember correctly. And then it expanded to other universities, and you had to have an email address, excuse me, with a university affiliated with it in order to become a member. And so I joined back in like 2005, 2006, and I had it for a long time, and I actually deleted it probably 8 or 9 months ago. And I mean, I was on Facebook posting all sorts of information, 9/11 information, just general current event information, and really trying to expose what was going on. And I mean, I definitely think that I won some people over. But I know I definitely alienated a lot of people. And at the end, I got to a point where I was like, you know what? How productive is this? Am I doing myself more harm than good? And I ended up deleting it. And there was a number of reasons why. I mean, I had like over 1,000 friends. It just kind of got out of control. And I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe I need to just delete it and maybe start over at some point. But obviously, it's going to be a collection information. It's clearly a government operation. There's no doubt. Just like Blogspot is, I have a blog and it's through Google. So I mean, anything that we do online is going to be subjected to government surveillance. And I don't, you know what? I don't care about that, to be honest with you. I mean, if we can't openly and honestly express our feelings and our thoughts and present information, what kind of world are we living in at that point? I mean, I don't want to live in a world like that. I don't want to be in a world where I can't speak my mind and, be honest about what's going on. And, that's something that I've realized, and that's how I'm gonna, proceed. That's how I've always done this. Because when I first started this blog, I was like, look, I could make up some name or whatever, but that's just not me. I want to be honest about this. And I think another big reason why I did it, like, look, if people see that I'm doing this, I'm actually using my name and and exposing this stuff, maybe other people will kind of, you know, figure, oh, hey, you know, he's doing it. Why can't I do it? You know?
Sure.
So I think we just gotta, you know, we gotta stay steadfast and we gotta stick to the facts and the truth. And, you know, we definitely can't give up, but it's certainly going to be a struggle to get anywhere. I mean, people are just so brainwashed with TV. I think, I mean, that's what I really see it as. I mean, people just watch TV and that's their fantasy. You know, they have their shows. You know, it's funny. Everybody has their own TV shows and I'd rather pick up a book and read or listen to your show or Charlie's show or, you know, turn on a radio show. And it's just,
right. You know? Well, because when you're watching TV, you're not really interacting. You're just being traumatized. You're in a trance. You're just taking information in because the frequency and the screen resolution and everything is designed to put you into a receptive state so that you believe what you see in the commercials, you believe what you see in the news, you pick up all of these things from the programs that you watch. I mean, that's why they call it programming. And you think that this is reality. And even if it's subtle, and you mentioned that just about every program, I mean, you hear the word Nazi, or you might hear the word Gestapo, or some other word that will connect you to something that they want you to believe. And even in the 70s, they had programs like Hogan's Heroes and all of these things that made the Nazis look really stupid. And it is deliberate. It is subtle, and you might not say, gosh, this program really makes these people look terrible. You're not going to say that. You're just making these assumptions. And we all have the assumption that, oh, Polish people are all kind of stupid. We have these, well, like the Italians. Aren't they all criminals? Aren't they all kind of dishonest belong, you know, their families all belong to the mafia? We get these misconceptions, and those are done through television.
Yeah, and I think you know, television and movies now have just completely ratcheted up the whole cultural Bolshevism aspect that we were talking about, where everything is just, it's all about sex, it's all about depravity, and just it's just disgusting. It's filth, and I mean that's really what they're pushing now, and that's what people get, and that's what people think is normal now.
Right.
So, I mean, overcoming that is going to be a major challenge, especially because, you know, there's nothing of substance, there's nothing truthful that you can find on TV at all.
Right.
Unfortunately, where most people rely for their information or their quote-unquote entertainment, which, like you said, is nothing more than programming and essentially... It's essentially mind control, if you ask me. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It is mind control.
Right. It shapes our culture. And because they can use emotion to draw us in, it's like music. They use our emotions to draw us in. And in fact, I did watch a movie last week, and it was about a homosexual boy who's like 14, and he ended up committing suicide because his mother was some sort of a religious nut who was always quoting scripture and leaving little scriptures around the house. And his family did not know that he had an issue. And then when they found out, they thought, oh, you could, his mother was just they portrayed her as a Christian nut. And she said, oh, you could get over this, and just really pushing religion. And the end of the movie, he ended up killing himself. And the end of the movie, honestly, was a huge gay parade with his mother there. It was so disgusting. I can't believe I even watched it. But what it did was make Christianity looked like it was intolerant, like it was just terrible that Christians would think that this was not okay. And the gay parade had all of these. They were weird looking. I mean, people, half dressed, and you would think, gosh, where's the parade for the straight people? I mean, they just, it was amazing, but they created all these emotions because by the end of the movie, you feel sorry for these people because it just made it seem like nobody understands these people, nobody tolerates this is terrible, and this is normal. Not everybody is born the same way, and of course the mother felt terrible because she didn't accept her son, and oh my goodness, what a propaganda piece. What a propaganda piece, and it was such a piece of garbage. And they had very good actors in the movie, but oh my goodness, it was sheer propaganda.
Exactly. Well, what you're describing is exactly the cultural Bolshevism or the cultural Marxism that Hitler describes. And I mean, this is, and see, this is something that I've been kind of focusing on lately and just really trying to understand it because it is a huge, huge part of this puzzle to figure out, how did they completely subvert our culture in the manner to where now, instead of people thinking, for instance, homosexuality is, the abnormal or weird or even, downright wrong, to where now people are saying, homosexuality is the new way to go. This is normal. This is good. This is,
Or acceptable.
exactly,
Well,
exactly. And I mean, I don't have a problem with gay people. I'm not gonna just immediately hate somebody or whatever because they're gay. But at the same time, if you can't recognize the agenda behind this, then you're being played for a fool because there clearly is an agenda, and there's no,
right.
and there can be no doubt that homosexuality is subversive. I mean, it's not normal. I mean, it's, what I'm saying. I mean,
Sure.
it's not the norm. This is not something that we should all think is okay and acceptable. It's not a healthy way to live one's life or to raise a family or, to base your society off of,
Right. Well, it was scripted so well that even I, knowing the background of Alfred C. Kinsey, knowing who funded him, that the Rockefellers funded him, and knowing this background that I knew, I still felt sympathy for this kid because it was scripted so brilliantly that it was designed to evoke emotion and sympathy.
Well, I think it's clear that they have human psychology figured out pretty well, and they definitely play on our emotions, and that's clearly a major aspect of this agenda. They know how to manipulate the human mind, and they know how to basically control the human mind, not even directly, but just through images and propaganda,
Sure.
and messaging, and I mean that and this goes back to the whole. To the whole problem we face is how do we reach out and talk to people about this that have they have no idea that this what we're saying even exists. You know what I'm saying? Like
Right.
when people are this isn't even in their vocabulary. It makes it incredibly difficult to even have a conversation like this. Which, going back to what John was saying yesterday, he's a one trick pony. I try to be a one trick pony. 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. That's the main thing that I think that is gonna turn the tide on these people because it's like I said, it's so obvious.
Right. And I think, too, that we have to recognize that depending on who we're with, depending on who we're addressing, depending on who our audience is, we have to determine where they are and what their interests are and appeal to what they would be willing to accept. In
Yeah.
other words, like in any classroom. You want to first evaluate where your students are before you don't want to teach them what is that word I'm trying to find here? It's too late.
Trigonometry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to try and teach them that before they learn algebra, before they learn the basics, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And you know, that's always been kind of one of my downfalls, at least in the past, is like, I just want to jump to the conclusion. Look, guys, the Jews are behind this all. Let's get on board with this. And, you know, people can't accept that unless you build them up, you know?
Sure.
And you're totally right. I mean, yeah, you definitely got to be able to, you know, figure out who your audience is and you know, where they're at as far as, you know, their mindset and their outlook on life. And that's something that I try to practice this every day that I can. You know, I mean, for instance, I was just talking with, you know, there's a family that lives near me and you know, we were talking and we were kind of talking about this, you know, this cultural degeneration that we see all the time. And yeah, I mean, you got to be mindful of where they're at and, you know, their perspective and even, you know, their background and, you know, what their experiences are. To sort of gauge, you know, how far you can go.
Right.
And you can only hint so many things. And at the end of the day, it's all up to us as individuals to figure this out on our own.
Right. And I mean, exactly. You can feed people information. You can give them wonderful information. But if they're not ready and willing to accept it, it's really, you just move on. Because some people are simply never going to believe you. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, like, we don't need to convince everybody, we just need to convince the right people, the people that will actually, you know, take a stand, the people that will actually go out and talk to their neighbor, or the people that will, you know, maybe start a blog or make a video or you know, just do something productive. Because I mean, this is really an information war more than anything. And
exactly.
So I mean that's really the mindset that I've kind of, because I mean for a long time, you know, when you first kind of get into this stuff, it's like, man, are we ever going to get out of this? You know, it's been going wrong for so long, and you know, and that was one of the things that I was thinking of when I was really learning about World War II and what Hitler was all about. It's like, geez, we totally destroyed the one guy who had everything right, and or well, maybe not everything, but you know, he was definitely on the right track.
Right.
And, you know, it's just incredible. It's like, it just makes the obstacle even more challenging to overcome. So, but I mean, I'm up to it, you know, that as long as I'm here and as long as I'm, you know, breathing, you know, this is what I'm going to be doing. So, and I think there's plenty of other people like that, you know, around the country, around the world. You know, you're a shining example, ZCF. There's plenty of other people that are willing to take the challenge and really try to change this world.
Right. And of course, the internet has made it very easy for us to find people who are like-minded and who are doing the same thing. And it's wonderful, because otherwise, who would we talk to about this?
yeah, exactly. It's funny. And you know, another thing that you guys were talking about is, I mean, there's things that we can do just as individuals to you know, escape this.
Oh, sure. Sure.
I mean, the food we eat, the medicine we take, the information we consume, all these sorts of things are stuff that are in our control.
Right.
And I think that you're obviously a big proponent of that type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, these are practical things that we can do in our everyday lives that are really going to make a difference, you know, just in our own lives. I mean, you know, like we said earlier, we're all individuals. We can only do so much. You know, we can't totally change everything, you know, in a day or, you know, by ourselves. So that's another thing that we really have to understand is there are a lot of things that are in our control that we can, you know, we can do to sort of get out of this madness that we see around us.
Right. And you have to start with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. There's no doubt.
Yeah, as far as changing anything, you just have to start with where you're at and then filter out, circle out, talk to your neighbors, friends, family.
Yeah. Yeah, you know when I'm actually gonna have my my mom and my sister out here in California in a couple weeks, and I'm gonna really talk to him about this and see if I can just like sit down face to face and get them to at least, you know, maybe answer some questions and you know try to get them on board and get them to see the bigger picture. So I'll definitely let you know how that goes.
That would be great. Figure out what they're interested in. Just figure
Yeah,
out what they're interested in.
exactly.
Like when I'm with people who have small children, they're interested in small children. So you might want to bring up vaccines
Oh, yeah.
and childhood illnesses. And I mean, there are just ways that you can just kind of feel people out and see where their interest lies. Because everybody's affected. Everybody is affected. You just have to figure out, okay, how is this person affected? And what can I do? What information can I give that person that they could relate to?
Exactly. You know, what can you slip in the conversation that will maybe get them thinking in a certain way, or maybe get them to think about something differently, or you know, have another perspective on something. That's what I try to do, and I think that's all we really can do. I mean, it'd be great if we could, you know, start a big, you know, political party or political movement or something like that, but it's going to take time to get to that level.
Sure.
And that's something that I am actually interested in doing. And it's just going to take some real thinking about what the best way to go about doing something like that would be. But you know that may be down the line. I think before we can do anything, we really need a good core base, a core group of people that are aware of you know that really understand the nature of the conspiracy. Because there are so many aspects of the conspiracy. I mean, you know, I've mentioned, you know, for the first year and a half I was into this, I was basically just focusing on 9/11 and the global war on terror and, you know, current events without really understanding the bigger picture and looking at not even World War II, but even before World War II. I mean, this conspiracy is ongoing.
Sure.
It's ongoing, so.
Isn't it amazing that neither of the candidates, the current president, although I hate to even refer to him as a president, but that Obama and Romney simply do not even mention the ongoing wars in Afghanistan and Iraq as if they weren't going on. And they talk about fixing the economy. How can you talk about fixing the economy without addressing the very thing, the very activity that is taking away so much of our money? And not addressing certainly the outsourcing of labor, that this was all devised by the government. It's
Oh, it's
just
incredible. It's incredible. I mean, it just shows you the total subversion of our political establishment and the political parties. I mean,
right.
it's amazing that people can really think that there's a difference and that we have a choice. I mean, we're basically looking at two people that are totally puppets of the Jews and the Jews' agenda, whether it's, you know, a Democrat or a Republican, it doesn't even matter. I mean, it's all the same. It's the same agenda marketed differently to different to different segments of the American population.
Right.
What it is, basically.
And they can, the Democrats argue with the Republicans and they keep this little battle going so that we basically will not look beyond that. We're fighting with each other so that we don't look at who the real cabal is behind the curtain.
Definitely. There's no doubt about that. And getting back to, you know, really kind of targeting the younger generation, I think that people in the younger generation are starting to see through this because it's really transparent now. I mean, you'd have to be just a complete bonehead not to recognize that, you know, something's very wrong with what's going on. And you know, I think that as more and more people in the younger generation, you know, come to understand what's going on, and you know, start asking questions about the wars and Israel. You know, for instance, why is Mitt Romney in Israel bowing down to the Israelis and throwing major fundraisers? why is he doing that in Israel? You know, why would he do that? You know, just asking basic questions like that.
Yeah, why is he standing before the wailing wall with the yarmulke on his head?
Exactly. Why is Obama doing the same thing? Actually, I don't even know if Obama's been to Israel, but I mean, you know, we could apply this to either party. I mean,
Sure.
it's absurd that people even make a distinction between the two. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's going to get more and more obvious, you know, as the economy continues to falter and, you know, as more and
and
more
people can't find a job and they have school loans to pay off and they
exactly.
have no options except to go into the military.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, there's tons of potential, you know, allies in the struggle. It's just a matter of reaching out to them and getting them on board with these facts and how to go about doing it. So yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna be a struggle. There's no doubt, but it's something that, you know, a challenge that I'm willing to take on. And I think there's more and more people that are gonna be on board with this as the, you know, as the days and months go on. So it's, you know, it's a long-term thing. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
No, certainly not.
You know, Deanna, I was gonna, before we get off here, I know we've been going on for over an hour now. There was one thing I wanted to say. Last time we were talking about Hitler and you know, people saying that Hitler was funded by the, you know, the bankers and whatnot in Wall Street, or, you know, he was a Jewish puppet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And one book that kind of promotes this theory is that Anthony Sutton, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler.
Right.
You know, I actually bought a copy of that book and I started reading it. And it was just last week, I read a couple chapters of it one night. And Deanna, I cannot tell you how unimpressed I was with this book.
And yet it's a big seller, or big people use it in the alternative truth media, alternative media.
Yeah.
And basically, you have to look at the background of Anthony Sutton. He did work for what was the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, which is, that's a university that promotes the government's version of things.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And well, there's other books that are written by the same kinds of people. And if you look at their background, you find, that guy's a Jew. So of course he would be writing about this. So you really have to look at people's background. You have to see what they're saying. And then you have to read what the opposition says. You have to read other scholarly works, because some of these books that people read are not based on any fact. There are no footnotes, no sources. It's just conjecture, and based on myth. And then they continue to promote the same myth. One writer will promote the same myth that Sutton promotes, and
it's like a steamroll effect. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
one thing I thought that was really interesting about the book. Well, maybe not interesting, but, you know, sort of, like I said, unimpressive. I was just really unimpressed with the book in general. And, I mean, I haven't read the whole thing, but, you know, I kind of got to...
Save your time. Don't, you know, well, don't waste your time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I really wanted to check this book out, because pretty much everybody cites it as, you know, the anti... You know, what I say and what, you know, Veronica and others say is, you know, basically the people who counter that always point to this book. So, you know, I bought a copy of it. It wasn't that expensive. I bought it on Amazon, and I started, you know, like I said, I started reading it, and he relies on Nuremberg testimony for a lot of his.
Exactly. Yeah.
He not only that, but he promotes this myth that the Nazis were these evil psychopaths that wanted to take over the world. And, you know, he even promotes the BS Holocaust story.
Mm-hmm.
In the first couple chapters that I read, he kind of either goes along with this or outright endorses it.
Right.
And I mean, those are just major red flags that just immediately throw in the whole book into question, if you ask me.
Right. And yet the alternative media, a lot of the people accept his work. And so it's unfortunate. Very unfortunate. And basically what you're looking at is the government's version of World War II, the government's version of everything that happened. I don't know why they give men credibility at all. It is just amazing to me. And I think that that is because of the publisher, who published that book.
Let me check real quick. It was 76 Press. Well, this is the edition that I have.
Okay.
It's out of Seal Beach, California, which is just north of here. I think it's in Orange County. But you know, I mean, his other books, he wrote about
Oh, he wrote
the
about the he did a three-part book.
right.
It was actually, well, it was three books, and it was wonderful. I mean, he told about how the U.S. basically gave all this technology to Soviet Russia.
Exactly, yeah. He wrote Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution and Wall Street and FDR. And one of his major flaws, this is another key point about this book, one of his major flaws is that he does not understand National Socialism.
No.
He does not at all. I mean, he accepts the mainstream Jewish version of National Socialism as, you know, this sort of, you know, anti-Semitic evil ideology that wanted to, supremacist
Right.
ideology that wanted to conquer the world and whatnot. He does not understand what the National Socialists were all about. And in fact, Deanna, it's funny. He actually, one of his, let me just see if I can find it real quick. He has an appendix in here that I think it's the first appendix A, the very first one. And basically what he does in the appendix, it's the program. It's like the 25-point program of the NSDAP. And he prints this as if it's some like irrational, you know,
Oh,
crazy.
those 25 points are, I mean, they really are very good.
They're right on the money. They're exactly what we need to do right now.
Exactly.
And he acts like it's some like, you know, evil, crazy, you know, it's just amazing, you know, what he's trying to do here. And I
So
mean,
you can see the state of his indoctrination.
yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I notice is that he does not understand, either deliberately or knowingly, he does not understand the nature of what Hitler was all about, of what the NSDAP was all about. You know, he clearly didn't read any of his speeches or his book or what Goebbels was saying or anything.
Right. It's the government's version. And I don't know why he's so well accepted. But some of the things that he says in his books are true. Some of the people that he talks about having an association with the corporations in Germany, those things are probably true. But you cannot base.
It's not that big of a deal, though. It's like,
Exactly.
yeah, I mean, it's just standard knowledge. It's not like he tries to make it a conspiracy or something when
Right, when it doesn't exist.
there's really nothing there. And I mean, that was one of the another thing that I noticed. It's like he's making this to be some big deal when it's really just a business relationship, you know?
Right, that had nothing whatsoever to do with the government at all.
Yeah. So, anyways, I just wanted to bring that up and mention that on here. That was one of the things I'd made a little note to bring that up because I know we talked about it last time.
Right.
So,
Well, John, it's just about my bedtime.
well,
I am an early morning person. I get up like 4:30 or 5, and so by 8 o'clock at night, my brain shuts down.
know, we'll. Well, you're a champion, Deanna. I appreciate you staying up late to talk to me. It's only, you know, it's about 7:25 here in California, and I do the same thing actually. I usually try to wake up early and catch Charlie's show when I can, but you know, I definitely can't do that every day because I'd have to wake up at 5 o'clock to catch his show every day. So,
Exactly.
but I do try, and I'm actually going to be on there on Wednesday, so I'll be getting up, definitely be getting up early for that one.
Great, I'll have to listen in.
Yeah, so.
Well, thank you so much, my friend. See, I wanted to say that.
Of course.
Thank you so much, John.
Of course, anytime. It was nice talking to you.
It's been delightful. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.